Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome and thank you for listening tonight. My name is Linda Mooney, and this is Other Worlds of Romance. And I am so happy tonight because I have with me Jody Wallace. Hi, Jody. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
And she's going to be reading. You're up in Nashville, right?
Yes, I'm a little south of Nashville, but close enough. That's the city everyone would recognize.
Yeah, okay. Well, I used to live there, so I'm kind of familiar with the area. But anyway,
okay.
Jody's going to be reading from Prodigal, which is book three of her Maelstrom trilogy, and which is it is the third and last book of this series. And if you want to check this out, I mean, first of all, the covers are wonderful. The first book is Angeli, and the second one is called Traitor. And there's a whole lot more going on. But if you would like to talk to Jody after she gets through reading her excerpt from Prodigal, you're more than welcome to call in. The number is 646-727-2932. Or you can, I have the chat room open, come on in. And you can listen there. And if you have a question for her, just drop it off, and I'd be more than happy to pass it along. Or if you want, you can, if you're listening there on Facebook or if you're listening on the Blog Talk Radio website and you have a question, you can send it to me, linda@lindamooney.com, and I would be more than happy to pass it along. Now, for those of you who don't know Jody, and I will tell you that she's smart, snarky, and seductive, but that's just the books for now. She writes sci-fi romance, paranormal romance, and contemporary romance. Her Maelstrom series with Entangled Publishing is a post-apocalyptic sci-fi romance about finding love during an alien invasion. Now, after growing up in the South in a very rural area, she went to school a long time and ended up with a master's degree in creative writing. Her resume includes college English instructor. Wow, I bet you had to parse a few phrases there. Technical documents editor, market analyst, web designer, and general all-around pita, pain in the butt. Hey, my kind of
I'm
girl.
Best at that.
She resides, huh?
I'm best
what?
At that part. I'm best at
You're
that
best
part.
At that part.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you know what gets me, I'm reading it, market analysis, technical, web designer, that's the analytical side, and yet you're also creative. So you're using both sides of your brain there.
Oh, yeah.
She resides in Tennessee with one husband, one grandma, two children, six cats, and a lot of junk. There's a sign just a couple of blocks over from where I live that says they're having a garage sale. It says our crap can now be your crap.
I don't sell my crap. I just cling to it. I'm ready. I'm ready for the apocalypse.
I'm ready for it too. You got to check out her website, guys. Jody Wallace, that's JodyWallace.com. And if you're really into it, and I told you I was going to do this, you got to check out her Etsy shop and her crocheted peens. Especially her Deadpool peens. And you said you just finished a Wolverine.
Yes, I had some. I recently did a series. First, we just did some normal, innocent little pink mm-hmm. ones and brown ones and a couple purple ones, purple peens. And I would send them to friends, and they would send me pictures back, and we'd share them with the world, and they were my peen friends. But then I don't know why, but one day, and this is where writers get their ideas, from the garbage can. Mm-hmm. So I guess I pulled an idea out of the garbage can, and I just made the Peen Avengers. So we got Iron Peen and the Hulk, and there's Ant Peen and Captain America Peen and Black Widow.
How big is the Ant Peen? I just got to ask.
He's a finger peen. You can put him on your finger and point at people to make them really pay attention.
Oh, That is
but
hilarious.
They just
it.
Recently had their first adventure on my website, and they faced off against the evil Justin Bieber. It was really close, but
Bieber. Oh my god.
This stuff does
okay.
not appear in my fiction, except for the spoofs.
You got to. So. Oh, you got to do something like that. Okay, we're gonna get on to Prodigal here, and I'm just gonna turn the floor over to you, and so you can tell us what Prodigal's about, and then launch right on into your. Because if not, we'll spend the whole 30 minutes talking about peens.
Well, I mean, okay. I'd like to. You know, usually, of course, as a writer, we don't have to talk and have people hear what we actually say. We get to, like, polish the words perfectly and then just email them places. And mm-hmm. so with the peens, you really need the photographs for the full impact with their innocent little eyes. Like, for a while I had a Tumblr with them, but the thing about the peens is they're not dirty. That if people were to send me, like, really
cute.
Dirty pictures with them, I'm not going to publish that stuff. They're innocent.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point right now. We're talking about the sci-fi romance that does not have
yes.
crocheted peens in it. I don't know if that would have gotten me better reviews or sales, but I'm always open to try new things.
Well, I'm the reason Prodigal, in fact, the reason this whole Maelstrom trilogy has me intrigued is that you're bringing in two of my most famous genres together, and that is the apocalypse with alien invasion.
Yes.
But your alien invasion does not mean that, I mean, these are good-looking aliens.
Yeah, some of them are, yeah. Well, the good
and
ones are.
So
the good ones are.
The good ones are. So, anyway, take it away, Jody, and let's get started on Prodigal.
The premise of the Maelstrom series is that there are these evil other dimensional entities that kind of burrow through from the other dimension and get on planets
mm-hmm.
that have sentient beings. They eat sentients. And then the good aliens fly around in these giant sentient spaceships, and they try to fight
mm-hmm.
the bad aliens and not let them take over our dimension. But when they come to a planet like, say, Earth, that has not reached a certain level of technological and social enlightenment, then they're kind of, it's part of their code that they can't ruin shit for us. It's a very prime directive kind of thing. Like, they can help us
mm-hmm.
because letting the bad guys get a foothold in this dimension is bad, but they can't ruin the path that our planet was supposed to be on. So my idea was that they kind of faked a religious apocalypse and pretended like they were angels, and they tried to fool us while saving the planet, but they picked this dude, a Hollywood guy, to be the chosen one, and he, of course, completely fucked it up. So I think the first line in the first book is that the chosen one has failed. Because how often do you start out with the chosen one failing? The chosen one always succeeds, and it's the end of the series. So I just... Turn that over. Anyway, we're on the third book. Our hero is the chosen one who failed at the beginning of the first book 2 years ago and then completely disappeared. Nobody knows where he's been. So here, the official blurb is, he nearly destroyed the world, but with her help, he can save it. So Adam Alsing, at least that's what they tell him his name is, has no idea who he is or why he's huddled naked in the snow next to a mysterious silver pod. When a gorgeous, no-nonsense sheriff by the name of Claire Lawson rescues him, she explains the planet's under attack, and he's been missing for over 2 years. The problem is, what he doesn't remember can kill them. And then keeping the peace in her post-apocalyptic town is all the trouble Sheriff Claire Lawson can handle. Until the MIA chosen one, the guy who could have prevented the apocalypse, interrupts her supply run. The shipborne aliens want to study him, and what's left of the Terran government wants to lock him up. But his charming demeanor and his desire to help, along with his sexy smile, has Claire fighting her better judgment to keep Adam around, for now. And that's the official blurb. And I'm going to start... The first chapter is, I think, available in several different places online. And certainly if you have an Amazon Kindle, I know they let you sample quite a bit of it. Mm-hmm. So that I didn't want to read the first chapter because it's available. So I'm going to read starting about chapter 5, maybe page 50, something like that. And the situation,
okay.
It's the day after Adam was found by Claire in the snow, and she and some of the other aliens who are actually kind of human aliens, they're transporting
mm-hmm.
him in a shuttle to the Shipborne secret base. And on the way there, they realize that a community of the Terran humans has been overrun by a swarm of the bad monsters. And this scene takes place in Adam's point of view, and I added a few descriptors to introduce each character that don't actually appear in the book, but I think they'll make it easier for reading out loud purposes. It was certainly very
mm-hmm.
interesting practicing to read this out loud because I'm like, hey, I don't write things that lend themselves to being read out loud. Anyway, so here goes. Adam gazed idly through the shuttle window at the horizon, trying not to brood over the fact Claire wanted him gone, until he realized he was watching a couple of dots in the sky that weren't specks on the window. They'd grown in size since he first noticed them. He nudged the soldier on his right. Hey, are those some of your ships? Right there above the horizon. He knew zero about aeronautical distances and had no idea if he'd known in his former life either. Hell, he wasn't even sure which direction they'd traveled. Since they were eventually going to check out the Yellowstone secret base, he assumed they must be going west. The soldier blinked a few times, squinted, and frowned. Cullen, the exobiologist who'd examined Adam along with the doctors this morning, turned and stared at the dots. Pilot, focus the shuttle sensors east-northeast. I can't even read directions out loud, so I'm kind of in Adam's position. So the pilot replied, in a sec, I'm downloading some entity map updates. Like everyone else, Claire studied the sky in the direction Adam had indicated, but her expression didn't change. He couldn't blame her for not wanting him at Camp Chanute. He didn't know who he was, where he'd been for 2 years. The connection he'd imagined between them didn't exist. She'd helped him because she'd helped any naked person she found shivering in the snow. Wherever he'd been, he'd taken care of himself. His body boasted a lot of muscles and little fat. He'd caught Claire inspecting him on more than one occasion with a certain appreciation, but her admiration of his physique did not make up for the fact she didn't want him around. The pilot finished his task and flicked some switches on the console. I'll be fracked. Looks like we've got a pack of demons trailing us. Should we take evasive maneuvers? Well, shit on a stick. Why didn't the sensors pick them up? Claire complained, her brow furrowing. They've only just come into range, the pilot explained. We had to reduce power to scanners and thrusters on any shuttles retrofitted with weaponry. Cullen hung over Dr. Sarah's shoulder, staring at the information on the console. It's demons, all right. Too late for evasive maneuvers. The bastards will be on the civilians in the settlement next. From his position, Adam could see Dr. Sarah's profile pretty well. She grimaced and said, in her soft voice, their population's been weakened by a breakout of the measles virus. I don't know what they can handle. Probably not much. Ship, are you getting this? Demon activity near the Riverbend settlement, Claire said with a quick glance at the intercom speaker. Adam assumed she was talking to the sentient AI that ran the mothership. Can you scan? We need to know if the demons are a scouting party or defenders for a shade horde. Demons. Those were the flying red monsters. He was about to see his first actually alien aliens. As the silence and tension grew, Adam found himself straining at his seatbelt. Can't we shoot them? Adam asked the twitchy soldier beside him. The ship has guns. We can try, the guy responded, but shuttles aren't as maneuverable as the demons. It's easier to tackle them hand to hand. He and the other soldier exchanged a glance. We probably need to wing up. I'm afraid I have bad news, Ship announced over the intercom. I have completed the focal area scan and detected a discrete blotch of shades. It shared coordinates that meant nothing to Adam. That's the settlement. Claire cursed bitterly. This is nowhere near a primary horde. How the hell did this many soul suckers get so far into the buffer zone? Unknown, Ship said. I fear this proves that my energy conservation efforts have interfered with global monitoring. I should have detected a horde of this magnitude. Gods, Dr. Sarah paled. Adam didn't understand most of what they were talking about, but their reactions meant this was bad, really bad. If the shades are alive, the humans might not be, Claire finished for her and turned to the two soldiers. We got to land and rescue anybody we can. Looks like you called it, boys. Wing up. The pilot swiped the controls of the shuttle and half rose. There are too many demons. I should go with the soldiers. Claire waved him down. If something happens to you, none of us can fly this bird. You stay with the shuttle. Though Claire wasn't the soldier's commanding officer, they followed her orders. From a cabinet, they attached giant white wings to their backs, grimacing in pain before flapping them experimentally in the cabin. Adam leaned out of the way. Thin silver armor covered their torsos and upper thighs, and metal bands covered their forearms. The wings folded compactly after the initial test. He'd seen winged men before. And jelly. Adam focused on the deja vu too hard, and it slipped away. Damn it. Do not, under any circumstances, get near the shades, Claire ordered the soldiers. Your job is the demons on our six. Activate emergency protocol if things go wrong. The rest of us will handle the retrieval of survivors. Understood. The men exited through the back of the passenger cabin. The shuttle slowed, and seconds later the demons that had been chasing them grew in size. Adam could make out bat-like wings and four arms on their red humanoid bodies. The clunk of a hatch or doorway in the back of the shuttle preceded the appearance of the two soldiers, airborne, their bodies surrounded by a slight glow. Sarah manipulated some levers on the control panel, and data swam across one of the screens. It's confirmed. The shade blotch has no connection to the primary hordes. The closest one is over 800 miles away. They're just here. I feel obliged to point out this is not how shades operate, Ship said. This is not a situation in my databanks. There is some possibility that shades cannot exist for long independently of a horde. We've been dirtside past Leviathan Point longer than anyone in shipborne history, Cullen griped to the AI. We have shade deaths all over the buffer zone. Nobody spotted any shades running free until now. Clearly, shit changes. He shot a quick glance at Adam as if seeing him with new eyes. Claire pointed at the screen. Can demons, I don't know, carry shades from place to place? Could they be causing this trouble? There is no evidence that any of the entities use tools or technology, Ship said. Shit changes, Cullen repeated. Demons change. We know that, and we're getting more proof of it every day. Demons never used to eat, and suddenly they're consuming flesh. So if demons can change, why can't the shades? Ship had no response, so Adam asked a question to clarify one of the many things he didn't understand. Why can't the soldiers get near the shades? You guys didn't tell him anything? Cullen huffed in disgust. Claire and Sarah exchanged a glance, and Sarah said, We can't let the entities know the shipborne are in this solar system. Jesus. He'd only been conscious a day, and he already knew about the shipborne. The monsters had been here a lot longer. Don't they have eyeballs? Sensors? Claire and Cullen took their seats as the shuttle accelerated toward the settlement. Their altitude decreased rapidly, pressure building in Adam's ears. These creatures don't have the same type of intelligence as we do, Adam. They don't realize shipborne are in the vicinity until the shades, that's the black blobs on the ground, eat somebody from a ship. Eat? Adam asked. Horrified. Did you expect him to pat him on the head? Cullen asked. Adam didn't mind sarcasm, but he wasn't going to let the scientist mock him. Granted, the guy seemed like an equal opportunity mocker, but still. Do you remember what happened to you before yesterday? You do? Then lay off the guy with amnesia while he's relearning everything you already know. Cullen raised his hands in an apparently universal gesture of surrender. Fine. Shades are globs of interdimensional matter that eat people. Technically, they absorb sentient life and leave the body behind, but they're surface-bound. They're slow. Demons scout food sources and drag sentience back to the shades. Shades do not show up 800 miles from a primary horde without any connecting tributaries. Adam's memory pinged, fuzzy and strange, like when he'd imagined wrecking his bicycle or having blood work done. There was a movie. I think I saw it. A fog that covered the town and killed people when it touched them. You know, that's not a bad way to think of it. Claire studied him as if measuring him with a ruler. She seemed calmer than Sarah, Cullen, and the pilot, more equipped to handle the unexpected. In a world where he couldn't remember his past, her steadiness drew him and reassured him. Even if she didn't want him in her town, he knew exactly where he wanted to be, at her side. I understand that the soldiers don't want to die, but I'm picking up that it's more dangerous than that. Am I right? He asked Claire next. Last night, she hadn't told him much, but now that he was here to stay, apparently she was loosening up. If the shades detect the shipborne by eating one, they create this big-ass monster called a Leviathan. It eats ship, Everybody on it, maybe the planet. The ship we're not too sure because they're always too dead to find out. Holy hell. Adam glanced out the window. And you sent Shipborne outside to face them? All Shipborne who traveled dirtside agreed a certain emergency protocol. She waved toward the window where the flying soldiers had gone. Let's just say they have the ability to obliterate their own DNA. Do you really need more information? No. Adam's respect for Shipborne bravery, for setting foot on the planet knowing they might have to commit suicide, increased. How much danger are we in? Us? Not. A shuttle can evade a horde of shades as long as the demons don't crash us, Claire said. They zoomed across the landscape, trees and highways passing in a blur. But the humans on the ground are in a lot of danger. We got to do a shade assessment at the Riverbend settlement. This is a big shuttle, so we're going to load up any survivors and get them out of here. I'm helping, Adam decided. I'm Terran. I don't need emergency protocol. They cruised over the settlement, where a part of a town near a large river had been converted into a walled-off village. The walls hadn't stopped the black sea of shades. It lay beneath them, oozing over the fortifications and through the streets. The wrongness of it hit the back of his throat like vomit. Cullen didn't like Adam's offer to help and said so. You can't take him down there. He doesn't have any training. He only learned about this shit 2 minutes ago. Actually, he does have training, Claire said grimly. Adam raised his eyebrows, but she didn't elaborate. Must be part of the life he'd forgotten. And I'm going to need the help. Cullen frowned. But if he doesn't remember... I don't care what I remember, Adam interrupted. I know right from wrong. I'm going. Sentients do have free will, the ship said blandly. Claire nodded sharply and motioned toward a cabinet, expression serious. You ever fired a gun before? I have no idea, Adam said. Adrenaline sizzled through him, his hands fisted. Can you teach me in 5 minutes? The end. That's funny.
Oh, yeah, everything. 5 minutes, hey, and we'll have 30 seconds to spare.
I have practiced reading that damn thing, and I tell you, the word I can't say is soldiers. Soldiers. I just practiced saying that stupid word. But, yeah.
kind of on the side there as a fellow writer, do you ever find that it's easier to write it as when you're reading it out loud, though? There are certain words that you've typed in. You know what they mean, but you just can't pronounce them yourself.
Yeah, I took some of those out of here before I read it.
I love that. I love these people have great rapport. They have, you're right, snarky, and that's very, very evident in that excerpt. That's wonderful. I need to ask you though. It is the couple that you have in this book, the romantic couple and all. Is that are they through all three books, or do you have different couples in each book?
Different. Each book has different couples. Some of the characters appear in all the books, though, and actually do mm-hmm. receive significant character development. Claire, the heroine mm-hmm. of this book, she appears in all three books. And my sister in particular said, I don't want to read a book about that bitch. But I couldn't wait to write her book. So here she is.
I have a Brenda here who said,
okay.
I was cracking up because I'm sitting here waiting. Okay, what does she want to know? She wants to know, how much is your crocheted stuff?
How much is it? Well, it depends on what she wants. Penises, I have a price tag of $25 on them right now, plus shipping and handling. just be warned, I take forever. But that's what they cost.
Yeah, for those of you, go to JodiWallace.com, and if you scroll down, right there on the front, right at the very beginning where it says welcome, she has a link to her Etsy store, so you can go and check out all that stuff there. And her newsletter sign up, and of course she's got the information on her latest release, which is Prodigal. And it says here that you can get a Trader on sale for $1.99 right now. Is that true?
I do not know if that's still true. I'm an awesome promoter of myself. I'll have to go look. Let's find out.
I would like to know, your stuff sounds like it would be fun as an audiobook, even though you don't think it is. Have you thought about putting your stuff in audiobook, or is Entangle going to put it in audiobook?
I have not been told anything to that effect, no. I do have some paranormal romances with Karina. I have two books about witches and werewolf shifters, and they're in audio.
Mm.
I have not listened to them. I can't bear it. I've heard they're pretty good.
Tell me about them.
Witches and werewolves. Werewolves, they exist. Humans don't know it. You know, that's the basic things when you're creating a paranormal society, as you probably know, is what do the regular humans know? How is the world different?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the regular world with stuff hidden, or is it the hidden stuff has come out and changed everything? And in this world, it's hidden. Everything's hidden. And the werewolves think they're the only paranormal critters out there, but the witches have to hide themselves from the werewolves and from the humans. And the first book is a hero and heroine, and the witch heroine has known the hero for some time. He doesn't know she's a witch, but she does know he's a werewolf, and she ends up having to get him out of a political pact situation. And it explains in that book a lot of the relationship between the witches and werewolves. That would be a spoiler if I told you. It's set in rural West Virginia.
Now, this witch interrupted in Pack and Coven?
Yes, it is. And they are in audio if people like audiobooks.
Ah. Okay, now I'm scrolling down and I am seeing. I found your
books.
WTF books.
Yes, I have to say, those are the ones, you know, when they say that a book just pours out of you and you just don't even feel yourself writing it, and then all of a sudden it has been birthed from your head like Athena. That would be those books. They are the shittiest thing I have ever written, and at the same time, they are the most wonderful. They're just mean and horrible and offensive and funny, and I don't even know how to explain them. But
Far Galaxies, Earthbound Passion, and Martian Conquest.
Yes, they're terrible.
The Mary Sue
Chronicles. You know, like the Mary Sue is usually the fan fiction stand-in for the author who was always perfect. So it's spoofing that, too.
I spoofed
a lot of Friends books in those books, and just any book or media property that I could think of gets skewered in there. In one of those books.
Okay, and you've got coming up soon Panther Queen.
Yes,
which
I hope to do that one next.
Three of Cooley's Panther and Stalking Evan.
Yes.
It looks like that's all in the same. That's Safe Shifters.
That is the same couple through the three books. And the first one is just a short story. It's free, so.
Ooh. Okay. And all. So what are you working on right now?
Right now, except for Queen of Panthers, I'm actually kind of on a sabbatical. I'm doing professional editing right now. And family stuff, because we've had some big changes in our family, and we're still adjusting to the new schedule. We about a year ago, we bought a new house, and my mom and her cats moved in with us. So we've been having some fun adjusting to the extended family household.
I hide in my basement a lot.
Is
that where your computer is?
Yes, it is, in the Bat Cave.
In the Bat Cave.
Yes, we also have a Chamber of Secrets and a room of requirement.
Oh, you got a wardrobe down there?
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay, Jody, it has been a thrill to have you on the show. It's been fun.
Thank you,
and,
Linda.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
The book is called Prodigal. It is book three of the Maelstrom Trilogy. You can check it out. You can find Jody on Facebook basically it's a Jody Wallace author. You can find her on Pinterest as Real Mean Kitty. On Goodreads, and of course on Twitter as Jody Wallace. Go sign up for her newsletter, and like I said, go check out her Etsy shop and all, because all writers need love. And all. But if anything, check out her Maelstrom Trilogy. It is the third book, so pick them up, all three of them. You can pick up all three and not have to worry about missing out on anything.
It wraps all the stuff
My name
up.
Is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance. Thanks for listening in, and thank you for those of you who – thank you, Brenda, for your question. And we'll hope to see you again next week. Take care, everybody, and good night. And we're done.
Okay. It did go fast.
It did go fast, and it was fun. And
thank you, Linda.
Like I said,
I should have trusted you long ago.
It was like I said.
I know you had
offered
before, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do that. See, now if this involved a television camera, I would not have done this. No.
Neither would I, because I have a radio voice. I have a face for radio, as they say. I have a face for radio.
Oh, I do like your voice. I do.
But thank you. And like I said, you might want to check into looking at getting, now that the trilogy is finished, you might want to think about looking into getting it in audiobook.
It's not my
you've got
choice.
Characters that just, they just pop out on the page. Well,
it would be nice. I'm gonna have to wait till I get the rights back and before I can do anything else with this series, like continue it, for example.
Anyway,
they don't want any more.
I wish you.
So. We're not on the air anymore,
right? I wish
you
luck on. actually, we are.
Oh.
Well, actually, this little tag will be at the end of the show.
Nice.
It's kind of like people like to see the behind the scenes stuff. So this part will be, until I close our connections here. So, but anyway, thank you again. And like I said, I want you back on the show when your next book comes out.
Thank you.
Okay. And we'll see you.
All right.
Take care.
Linda.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Good night.